I think God is majestic and powerful and incredible, and that doesn't take away to me to say, and God is in me and in you, and I can feel God around us in every moment.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. You know, when something major and serious happens and someone makes a joke about it and people aren't sure whether they should laugh or not, and then the person making the joke says, oh, too soon? And usually, yes, it's too soon. But there is something about art that gives us some distance and lets us talk and think about things that we might not be ready to face yet head on. I remember the bedtime story ritual with my kids in which I first tried to tell the silliest story possible. I got some laughs, but then they were bored. But what really worked was when I made up this endless, continuing story about some mythical children who just happened to be the same ages as my children, and every night would be one more adventure in their lives, facing something difficult. No surprise, these difficulties paralleled the ones in my children's lives. But they didn't seem threatened or judged because it was not about them, although it was totally about them. But casting these events into a story, or making art, if you will, created a safe distance for the kids to think through what they would do in a similar situation, and they were never bored. They hung on every word. That's just one of the magical properties of art. In today's episode, I speak with Rabbi Adina Allen about her therapeutic art process as discussed in her new book, A Place of All Possibility, Cultivating Creativity Through Ancient Jewish Wisdom.
I think that most of us live in a culture where we've been cut off from our creativity and certainly cut off from art making as something that's available to all of us regardless of perceived talent or ability. Many of us, at least in the communities that I lead for, I'll ask at the beginning of a workshop, how many people in this room were told in third grade by a well-meaning adult, you know, put down the paintbrush or mouth the words in choir, stand in the back of the dance line because you weren't very good. And almost every single person will raise their hand. And it's interesting just the amount of shame that is laden with that for so many of us, whereas something else we might not be great at, let's say hiking, we'll still take a walk in the woods, or we might not be top chef, but we'll still make a dinner for our family. Yeah. And there's something about art where if we're not quote unquote good at it, or if we've been told by someone that we're not, we never touch that stuff again. And we say, oh, this is for children. It's great for children. We want children to be connected to the arts. And so I guess I'll say both. I think art is powerful in the ways that we know that it creates culture and it shifts ideas about how we see things. It's also powerful as a mode of exploration, as a mode of self-discovery, and as a mode, which I'm excited to talk about here, especially as a mode of spiritual connection, to connect to some deep core inside of us and to something bigger and beyond ourselves. So I think that's available to all of us. And part of my life's work and mission is to help open up that opportunity for people to see themselves as creative and see art making as something that could be a core part of their lives and spiritual practice.
I loved words you use like connecting, spirituality, but also if you've got people 40, 50, 60 who still carry with them, oh yeah, I remember when I was told this, that says something about how meaningful and formative that was. Can we add the word healing to those words?
Absolutely. Yeah. Healing for sure. Healing creative trauma.
Yeah. Now, some people in some traditions would say, my faith is separate from art. Talk to me about, have those ever been separate for you, or did you intentionally have to put those together? Were they always one for you?
Yeah, that's interesting. This probably is true across many faiths, although as a rabbi, the one I know the most about is Judaism, but that there's also lots of restrictions around art, right? There's, you can't make a graven image. Mm. So a lot of people in Jewish faith feel like, oh, maybe art is off limits. And I think that touches in on just like the power and the ability to tap into spirit that art has. I would say, like, for me, I grew up in a Jewish household. My mom is actually a convert. She converted to Judaism before I was born. But Jewish themes and imagery and themes from other religions, including Catholicism, which she was raised as, were really prevalent in her art. And so I was definitely around iconography and images coming through from art practice. I grew up in an art studio, but it was really a spiritual place. I think I can say that looking back on it. It was the place where I felt like I could be fully myself. I could tap into places in myself that weren't maybe permitted in my upwardly mobile suburban neighborhood and life. The studio was a place where you could unpack things, you could be messy, raw, in process, not knowing, exploring deeper, darker, unclear aspects of the self. And so I would say it really was a spiritual place. And I think only later was I able to realize and put that kind of language to it.
You have put language to it. This whole book, A Place of All Possibility, that sounds very positive and open. Cultivating Creativity Through Ancient Jewish Wisdom. Can we go there for just a minute? Ancient Jewish wisdom to cultivate creativity. And you say something remarkable in rabbinic interpretations about a great voice spoke and did not speak more, but also a great voice spoke and never ceased. So will you talk to me about those two and how that leads you into creativity?
Thank you for bringing that. And I will just say, as a rabbi, and part of my goal and dream in writing this book and writing it now, feels like it's probably always a hard time in the world. This feels like a particularly hard time in the world for so many people, both I think collectively, globally, but also personally for so many people. And I think that Jewish tradition has something to offer everyone that I hope this book helps make maybe more available to anybody who seeks it or wants it or can find meaning in it, just like I think any of us can draw meaning from all of the great faith traditions. And Judaism does a really great job in the rabbinic tradition of holding complexity, nuance, and contradiction. There's a longstanding tradition of textual interpretation that goes across the ages, like a page of Talmud in the middle has a core text and then has a discussion about it, and then has other generations along the margins who are discussing that discussion and giving their interpretations, which often contradict with the interpretations in the middle of the page. And so I just love the idea of preserving dissenting opinions, holding multiple viewpoints. And I think that's something we could all really, myself included, want to strengthen as a capacity. And the text that you brought, Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf, is just a really beautiful and poignant example of that, right? It says, a great voice spoke, and then it's up to interpretation what the last word, Yasaf, means. Does it mean a great voice spoke and then no longer spoke after that? The revelation at Sinai is what it's referring to. This great voice spoke, it gave forth the commandments, the Torah, however you want to understand that, never spoke again. That's it. That's the canon. That's what we have. Or it could also be, with playing with the way vowel punctuation works in Hebrew, it could be read as a great voice spoke and never ceased speaking and is always continually coming forth. And I'll just say one of the things that I find meaningful isn't to collapse into one of those being right or the other. It's actually holding both, that there is this, for me, powerful canon of text that has accrued so much meaning and richness over time that I do hold in a certain way. And I believe God's voice has never stopped speaking, is continuing to speak to this day. And to me, that also says the creative process, the process of creation of the world is ongoing. And how does that happen? It happens through all of us. And so that we are also partners in that ongoing creative work.
Which is really interesting. I think an impulse we might have is, well, figure it out. What does it really say? Because I want to know what it really means. But there might be also a delight in the fact that it's slightly ambiguous. And I think that takes a little bit more, actually maybe a little more faith to say, maybe God's okay with that. Maybe he's going, yeah, I can't wait to see what they do with this.
And there are even texts that show exactly that, God being like, ah, my people have usurped me in power and in authority. And now it's no longer in heaven. It's in your hands. There's many texts that speak to that. I think you're right in the way that I think any faith or tradition should help cultivate the qualities of self that are most needed in the world right now. That in that way, I think it helps cultivate a capacity that we really need, right? Like, how do we not collapse into one side or the other? We can see this politically. We can see this in so many ways. And how are we able to say, like, there actually is truth in this, and also there's some truth in that, and also, I'm not very old, but I am now in my 40s. And I will just say, over my short life, seeing for myself, like, there's a time in my life when a certain interpretation was really necessary. As I grew and I had kids and my life changed, I was like, oh, actually, I totally see that other interpretation now. And that's actually what I need to lean on. And so just expanding our capacity to hold, expanding our capacity to appreciate what others might need and are holding.
I would love to focus for a minute on a particular experience or feeling that you describe. First, I'd like to just ask you about your own experience with what you call a feeling of flow. because I think I relate to what you're saying here. For me, it's been a past life as a songwriter and writer for stage.
And you make a lot of false starts, but you have this feeling that it's out there, just barely out of reach. And if you just keep at it, you're going to grasp onto it. And then mistakes don't seem to matter. You come up with something and say, oh, well, that one's not it. But it's more like you're just brushing the dust and debris away from something you're still absolutely certain is there. Kind of like digging for buried treasure, but you can actually sense the treasure and you're not sure if it's drawing you to it or you're drawing it to you. But you're connected and you just keep trying until suddenly you feel that's it, that's the right thing. When you first start writing, you think, well, that's not good. But when you're in the flow like that, you're just exploring instead of judging yourself. So there aren't mistakes, just explorations.
And I'll try and quote you here, a feeling of flow, a sense that I was being supported by something I couldn't touch or see. I have come to call this something God. Mm-hmm. You talk about drawing the divine into our midst. When did you recognize that, or what was that like for you in art?
My mom created a methodology called the open studio process, which is now used all over the world and been adapted to communities across the globe. It's a very simple process. Intention setting, you write down an intention, then you go into art making in an exploratory way, letting yourself be moved by what brings pleasure and really finding that sense of flow that I want to return to answering that part of your question. And then there's a practice of witness writing, which is really writing in response to the piece and the process, anything that came through in a stream of consciousness way. So I grew up with that as just, that's what we did in my house. That was a, now I understand it as a spiritual practice, but it was just what we did together. Uh-huh. And then I went to rabbinical school where Judaism and rabbinic training is really focused, at least the school I went to, which is why I went there, on intellectual engagement, on a rigorous intellectual engagement with text and translation, interpretive strategies I was describing before of, and understanding how the ancient rabbis did that and bringing our own voice to that. And I felt very stimulated and excited and moved by the intellectual rigor and the debate and that mode of engagement. And I felt like something was really being left on the table, that if we're only engaging from here up, only a certain part was being engaged. And so something else wasn't being touched, or like the material of the text that I wanted to really drop in and move me, it wasn't doing that. And so I started experimenting with what would happen if I brought the open studio process of intention, art making, and witness after text study. To get back to flow, the core part in this process that art making plays is to access a state of flow, to follow where your energy leads you and to let that be your guide. And I think that when we're in a state of flow or pleasure, first, the intellectual material that we engaged in can work on us rather than us only actively intellectually working on it. And also things get to be like rearranged, new ideas bubble through the way, I'm curious if you would say this, but when you write a song, you might even say, oh, that song came through me, as opposed to like, I wrote that song. Same thing. So to me, that's God. That's like the great consciousness. That's however we want to say spirit moving through us and us becoming open and supple enough for that movement to occur.
I wonder, are you able to give me an example of maybe a bit of text and what your art turned out to be and what that flow process was? Is that hard to pin down?
Oh my goodness. No, I'm just going to look on my desk at the most recent program that I led. I lead a monthly program called Have You Made Art About It Yet, which is titled the question that my mom would ask me as a kid when I would go to her with a problem. And she would be like, well, have you made art about it yet? Which, as I always say, was super annoying as a 9-year-old, but now has become the tagline of my life's work.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. Exactly. People will say they feel themselves like rearranged afterwards, their thoughts and ideas rearranged. They feel softened and opened. They feel connected to something bigger than themselves. People feel, I think, also certainly who are Jewish who come to the sessions feel like they actually have something interesting and meaningful to say to these texts, and these texts have something interesting and meaningful to say to them. And that it's not just about some expert who is fully steeped in tradition, but that no matter who they are, what their life experience is, when it comes in contact with these texts, something new and innovative and interesting and necessary is born from that, that can benefit not only them, but all of us.
This is In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. We'll be back in just a moment. There is power in stories.
They inspire us. They help us see ways we might try doing things. And sometimes a story will even tell us not to go down that particular path. And it's nice to learn that from a story or a conversation before you experience it yourself. Hi, Stephen Cap Perry here from the In Good Faith podcast. I love stories because what they teach me about people, about God, about politics, about everything. And I hope you will check out the brand new podcast, Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. There is so much to learn from the stories of these guests because they are people who found themselves in an uncomfortable moment. They could have just left the situation, written off the people they disagreed with, but instead they made something beautiful out of it. And you can learn how, and I know you'll like the stories. This is hosted by Julie Rose, the host of Top of Mind. She does a great job, and I know you'll love the guests and their stories. Check out Uncomfy.
Welcome back to In Good Faith.
Has a book been out long enough that you have started to get responses from people who picked it up and started working through it?
Yeah, and I'm excited. You know, it came out in July. It's been an incredible reception, but also I've gotten to learn new things, which makes me feel like it's the right thing to be doing. Like, it's generative for me as well. I will say one of the negative, I got a 3-star review on Goodreads, and it was by someone who was not Jewish, who was Christian, who said they felt like I made God too accessible. That God is grand and majestic and he is the almighty, all powerful. And that this book made it feel as though we could like touch and feel God in our everyday lives. And that felt, while they really liked the book, that theologically just felt very problematic. And I really appreciate that articulation. And I would say they really got what I was saying. But I think both. I think God is majestic and powerful and incredible. And that doesn't take away to me to say, and God is in me and in you, and I can feel God around us in every moment.
Yeah, I can't help but think of Elijah and seeing the storm and the earthquake, that God was not in them. Those were all big and majestic, but then just how quiet God was for Elijah in that moment. And even just that there was food that appeared out of nowhere, and which almost sounds like this remarkable act of creativity just to keep him alive when he'd given up.
Totally.
Let me ask you about the whole idea. What do you think it means that God made us to be creators like God? Because this theme comes out very strongly.
There's lots of Jewish texts in the book, but there's 5 core texts. And the first one is the idea that, as you mentioned earlier, Bereshit bara Elohim, that's how Torah begins. The Hebrew Bible begins with those 3 words. In the beginning, God created. So bara, this word to create, is the first verb that to describe God. And then a few verses later, we're told that human beings are made B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God. And so for me, that line that we're made in the image of God, many people know, and that can be taken to support all kinds of beautiful ideas. But one that I find very powerful is that if God, the primary verb of God, the first verb to describe God, is to create as creator, and we're made in that image, then we are made in the image of the creative force of the universe. We are all created creative. And that when we are in touch with that place of creativity in ourselves, that's when we're, or at least one of the ways when we are in touch with God, as God moves through us. And going back to the idea of like, what is flow? What is it when we're open to something just moving through us that we didn't like rationally think? To me, like that's God.
Artists often use words like inspiration. Something comes into us. Literally, yes. To inspire. The phrase that you just used, that you use in the book, is that we are created creative, which I don't know, you just put a little trademark sign by that and sell bumper stickers. But it's so instructive. And just to hear that, it's duh, but I'd never put those words to that thought before. And that we can feel closer to God in creative moments.
Totally.
Which is a little encouraging to say, this music, this art, this dance, whatever, is not as frivolous as you might think it is. Sometimes people want to keep their religion and their art very separate. And like you said, there's a dilemma of, do I make an image of God? I'm not supposed to make graven images, but here you are working with something, with shapes, with colors, with... Do you find that people who want to avoid actually portraying God or still find an outlet? Just talk to me about what you see happening.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in some ways, everything is an image of God, right? We're all images of God. We're just one piece. And again, to that idea we were talking about with the multiple interpretations held on a single page, another one of my favorite texts, which I write about in the book, that says that God came forth like a a picture visible from all angles. We could all see it from where we were, and it looked back on all of us. But if it's visible from all angles, then each angle is only seeing that particular angle of God. And so to me, that feels really powerful. Like we can each see a piece. We each are a piece. None of us are the whole. And I feel that way about art as well. To me, the problem is when we say this one image is all there is and this is God, right? That's the problem. The problem isn't, to me, each piece of art is a piece of divinity coming into the world. And I think, you know, it feels clear to me that to cut people off from their creativity is a way of controlling their access to God or to the divine. And I think whether intentionally or not, that's what our society does, right? It says this is limited to a very small select few, and which happens in religion as well, right? Only the rabbis or only the priests or only the this have this access. And while as a rabbi, I feel like there's a very important role that rabbis play in training for religious professionals and people who followed this calling, which doesn't mean that everybody doesn't have access and shouldn't have access to that like core feeling and connection to God.
First of all, I sort of wish we were doing an exercise in art right now, one of your sessions, but that's something that people can look for online, including me. Would you briefly touch on what you call your five core principles of this Jewish studio process?
I've spent a lot of time with just the opening lines of Genesis, of the Torah, of Bereshit in Hebrew, and I just find there's just so much there to unpack that speaks about creativity. The first is the one we just went over. We are created creative. We're created in the image of the divine creative force. Just a couple words later in the creation story, it says, Bereshit bara Elohim, in the beginning God created, and the earth was tohu vavohu. This pair of words that means, they're a little ambiguous, but it means like chaotic and void. The world was chaos and void. Mm. And it says there was darkness on the face of the deep. There were these waters and darkness. And then we get to, and God spoke and let there be light. But before that, we have the chaos and void. And certainly in Jewish tradition, there has been a strand of interpretation that is demeaning of the chaos and void. These are disgusting. This is bad. This was like, oh, there was this nasty, gross stuff. And then God spoke and then there was light. And thank God for the light. Let's get rid of the chaos and void. To me, and I think anybody who's been involved in the creative process could speak to this, that's how the creative process happens. There's chaos and void, both in the outer world and in our inner world. And those two are mirrors and reflections of one another. And when we bring our creativity to that, the bara, that creative force, to the chaos and void, we begin to work with it. We can begin to befriend it. We can begin to transform it into the new world that will arise. And so that's what I see God doing. And as beings made in God's image, that's what I see our invitation. How do we not revile, dismiss, try to block out the chaos and void, but say, actually, what's happening, even if I wouldn't have chosen it, certainly, these actually can be looked at as the beautiful raw materials to create what comes next. And actually, we can only create what comes next if we interact with this chaos and void. So that's the next principle, that creation comes from chaos and void. The third is lech lecha, which means go forth or go to yourself. It's ambiguous, again, in Hebrew, what that second word lecha means. And this is God's call to Avram, to Abraham, to go forth from your father's place, from your native land, to the land that I will show you. And the idea that it's both lech lecha, get going, get out, go somewhere, but also lech lecha, get going, go into yourself. That each of us in our life are called on a journey outward into the world around us, but also inward into ourselves. And those journeys have to be in conversation with one another. And that creative process is a way to help us discern where the voice is calling us to, what we're being asked to do, and then to process what we're encountering as we go forth on that journey. The fourth is Ehiye Asher Ehiye, which translates to I will be that which I will be, which is how God self-identifies to Moses at the burning bush when Moses asks God, who should I tell the people is sending me to take them out of Mitzrayim, out of the narrow place?
Right.
And I think it's really incredible that I would imagine God to say, tell them the God of war is taking them out, or tell them the God, the shield, the sword, the whatever, something powerful and tangible. And instead God says, tell them basically the force of change and transformation is taking them out of the narrow place into the open expanse, so that we can understand one of God's primary identities as change and transformation and not as something solid and fixed. So God is a creative process, God's self. And the fifth is hafochba, which says, turn it and turn it, for everything is in it. And in its context, that is a line that is said about Torah. We're meant to turn Torah and see it from ever new angles. But I think this is an instruction for all of us in life to develop the capacity to turn it, whatever the it is, the newspaper headline, the person across the table from us, our own self-conception, that creative process and creative practice is a way of cultivating the capacity within ourselves to turn things and see them from ever new angles.
That was super concise and gone into a little more depth in your writing. But the whole idea, you've talked about inner and outer mirroring each other, and that sometimes I think what's inside, we may not always be able to figure out what it is to get it out. But I think this flow you're talking about and going into art might be a way, or might be, is a way to get what's inner to an outer state in some way.
Oh, I love that you said that. That's really powerful.
Well, I think I'm quoting you back to you.
No, I don't think so. No, I'm just looking around at the art around me. I think, especially with visual art, it is a way of taking the inner, bringing it outer, and then you can have a conversation with it. You can build a relationship with it. You can actually see and touch it and get to know it more. And I think that we often feel in this society that the way to understand the inner is just like deeper, harder intellectual rigor. And I just think it now needs to be held alongside intuition, imagination, so our other ways of knowing, and have those strands of who we are and how we know things be more woven together.
The last question I was going to ask you, what do you know about God, what you call or think of as God now, that you did not when you were the 12-year-old girl with your mom saying, did you make art about it?
I think I always knew, and I think we all know as children at a certain point, God in a very deep and profound way. And it takes a going away from that for a certain time, or at least in my own story, and then coming back to it and now having words to be able to explain it and practices to be able to more actively cultivate and access it. But I think I always felt that deep pull and connection, and now I just have more psychological, spiritual language for understanding what that is that I originally felt.
Thanks to Rabbi Adina Allen from Jewish Studio Project for speaking with me.
This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Aaliyah Ebert, Katarina Martinich, Soraya Pearson, and James Sturdivant. Our post-production team includes DJ Cromarty and Mark Anson. Spread the word about In Good Faith by leaving a comment and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. We think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Our YouTube page is youtube.com/in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join us again soon, right here in Good Faith.